Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Bennington, Vermont. This talk, delivered on Sunday, June 21st, 2026, is by Katie Montavon on the topic of What a Strange Muscle is the Brain.
So I have a reading. It is an excerpt from a TED Talk by Jill Bolt Taylor, who wrote the book My Stroke of Insight, A Brain Scientist's Personal Journey. She is a neuroanatomist who dedicated her career and research to severe mental illness because she has a brother who was diagnosed with a brain disorder, schizophrenia. But when she was 37 years old, she woke up to discover that she had a brain disorder of her own. A blood vessel had exploded in the left half of her brain, and in the course of 4 hours, she watched her brain deteriorate in its ability to process the information. So I've abridged this so that it's short enough that we can actually hear it, but you might go watch it yourself or read her book, because it's fascinating. On the morning of the stroke, I woke up to a pounding pain behind my left eye, and it was the kind of caustic pain that you get when you bite into ice cream. And it was very unusual for me to ever experience any kind of pain, so I thought, okay, I'll just start my normal routine. She tried to go on with her normal routine, working out, taking a shower, but her perception of herself was strange, and her body was rigid and took her full focus to try to control, and before long, she lost control of her body. So I'm going to go back to what she was saying. And I'm asking myself, what's wrong with me? What's going on? And in that moment, my left hemisphere brain chatter went totally silent, just like someone took a remote control and pushed the mute button. Total silence. And at first, I was shocked to find myself inside of a silent mind, but then I was immediately captivated by the magnificence of the energy around me. And because I could no longer identify the boundaries of my body, I felt enormous and expansive. I felt at one with all the energy that was, and it was beautiful there. Then all of a sudden, my left hemisphere comes back online and says to me, "Hey, we've got a problem. We've got to get some help." And I'm going, "Ah, I've got a problem." So it's like, okay, I've got a problem. But then I immediately drift right back out into the consciousness. And I affectionately refer to this space as La La Land. But it was beautiful there. Imagine what it would be like to be totally disconnected from your brain chatter that connects you to the external world. And again, my left hemisphere comes online and it says, "Hey, you've got to pay attention. We've got to get help." And I'm thinking, I've got to get help. I've got to focus. So I get out of the shower and I mechanically dress and I'm walking around my apartment and I'm thinking, I've got to get to work. Can I drive? And in that moment, my right arm went totally paralyzed by my side. Then I realized, oh my gosh, I'm having a stroke. And the next thing my brain says to me is, "Woo, wow, this is cool. This is so cool. How many brain scientists have the opportunity to study their own brains from the inside out?" And then it crosses my mind, but I'm a very busy woman. I don't have time for a stroke. So I'm like, okay, I can stop for a stroke. I can't stop the stroke from happening. So I'll do this for a week or two, and then I'll get back to my routine. Okay, so I've got to get help. I've got to call work. I couldn't remember the number at work, so I remembered in my office I had a business card with my number. So I go to my business room, pull out a 3-inch stack of business cards, and I'm looking at the card on the top, and even though I could clearly see in my mind's eye what my business card looked like, I can't tell if this is my business card or not, because all I can see are pixels. And the pixels of the words blend with the pixels of the background and the pixels of the symbols, and I just couldn't tell. And then I would wait for what I call a wave of clarity, and in that moment, I would be able to reattach to normal reality, and I could tell that it's not the card. That's not the card. It took me 45 minutes to get 1 inch down inside the stack of cards. In the meantime, for 45 minutes, the hemorrhage is getting bigger in my left hemisphere. I do not understand numbers. I do not understand the telephone, but it's the only plan I have. So I take the phone pad and I put it right here. I take the business cards and I put it right here, the business card, and I'm matching the shape of the squiggles on the card to the shape of the squiggles on the phone pad. But then I would drift back out into La La Land and not remember when I came back if I'd already dialed those numbers. So I had to wield my paralyzed arm like a stump and cover the number as I went and pushed it so that I would, as I came back to normal reality, I'd be able to tell, yes, I've already dialed that number. Eventually, the whole number gets dialed, and I'm listening to the phone. And my colleague picks up the phone, and he says to me, "Woo, woo, woo, woo." And I think to myself, oh, my gosh, he sounds like a golden retriever. And so I say to him, clear in my mind, I say to him, "This is Jill. I need help." And what comes out of my voice is, "Woo, woo, 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 woo." I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I sound like a golden retriever. So I couldn't know. I didn't know that I couldn't speak or understand language until I tried. So he recognized that I needed help, and he gets me the help I need. So my brain injury was very different. It was from a fall on my way home from work. I'm going to try my approach to teaching, which is not to have everything written and read it. So we'll see how this goes. But this quote really struck me because the way that it changes your brain when something happens in your brain is so shifting of everything. And when I finally read or kind of heard this quote, a lot of things fell into place of how hard it is to kind of interpret the world around you when your brain is trying to get it right and it's all a little off. And so I think it was just over 2 years ago, I was on my way home from work and had an accident. I woke up in the ER, so I was unconscious for about 45 minutes, but I don't remember a whole week. So from 15 minutes before the injury to a week later, it was just gone. And then after that, it starts to come back in little bits. I thought it was 2012 when I woke up in the hospital. And I knew I was with my current wife, but I didn't know that we lived together. So there were some like strange mismatches of things happening. SVMC sent me on to Albany, and Albany released me because I was too severe for SVMC, but really tame for Albany. And they said I could go back to work on Monday, which was not happening. My early symptoms were bad judgment. I was always exhausted. I had no balance. I just kind of tip over. Constant headaches and pain. I was easily overwhelmed by noises, lights, moving things, and people. And exhausted by making decisions, which is a really strange... That one really hit me weird. And I especially remember feeding myself being a major problem because I'd get hungry and I'd go to figure out what to eat and I'd get to the kitchen and I'd try to figure out what to eat. And by the time I had tried to think through all the options, I'd get exhausted and I'd go back and sit down again. And so I had to get things that were just sitting there waiting for me to eat them when I needed something. I also had kind of vision, my vision was blurry and unreliable. And later, some of those things started to work themselves out. But some of the things that still remain are kind of auditory processing problems. So understanding what people are saying, my hearing's fine, but the way that I interpret it is not quite accurate always. Word finding, which most people can't notice because I have a large vocabulary to start with, but sometimes just a slightly strange word comes out and my family will notice. Executive functioning, which I was strongly ADHD before. And so I had a lot of tools, but brain injury kind of broke the tools and it's taken a lot of work to get any back. Emotional outbursts, which are really normal post-brain injury, but also really tricky. And then balance is still an issue, which is why I'm now on a stool. Neck and back pain and exhaustion. So as I was thinking about this and what to share, I was thinking about kind of the disorientation that brain injury has because your brain interprets everything around you. And so when I was in physical therapy, she had me follow her finger. And she said, "Did you feel that?" And I said, "It felt weird." And she said, "Your eyes are jumping." Like, they're not smoothly going. And there were several places where things like that would happen, where somebody outside of me would tell me what was going on. But all I could tell was that it felt weird. Which is especially problematic because I couldn't find a doctor who would be my expert. So locally, my primary care physician was really supportive, but not in a role to be not knowledgeable enough to be able to really make a treatment plan or tell me who to go see or anything. And so I joined support groups. I took classes on fatigue and cognition. I listened to books and podcasts. And really, I made my own treatment plan, which I don't recommend as you're recovering from brain injury, but a lot of us end up there, it turns out. And the book, The Stroke of Insight, that I read the quote from, was one of the first books that was recommended to me about brain injury and recovery. And it really transformed the way I thought about recovering from brain injury. She fully explained her 8-year process of relearning everything. So she couldn't walk, she couldn't talk, she had such significant hurdles, and she did make it back to being a professor of brain science and fully functional, but it took 8 years and a lot of support from her mother and a lot of going against the medical advice at the time and listening to her body. So what she did was she rested when she felt like she needed to, she pushed herself in the ways that she needed to. She tried to relearn things. She knew enough about the brain to know that brains relearn. And I think that really helped me in thinking about kind of how do I start to get back to things that I have lost. It also helps that when I teach math, I often will use an analogy that learning is kind of like, learning math is like learning how to juggle. And that when you learn how to juggle, I brought learning aids, but I am just going to leave them there because it's too much. You start with just throwing one ball, and you catch it, and you throw one ball back. And as you practice that every day, your brain builds connections and myelinates the connections and makes it quicker to get the between the different parts of your brain that need to be acting. And so after a few weeks, all of a sudden, this is easy. And now you can add a second ball, and then you can add a third ball. And our brains do this just naturally. And now in the world of brain injury recovery, I'm finding that's called brain plasticity, where your brain can really recover. You can get everything back. You just have to take time to do it. And one of the analogies that I heard as I was in support groups was that brain injury can be a little bit like somebody took out, I always picture Highway 7 and 7A. So a flood took out both those highways, and you have to make it to Manchester. You can do it, but it's going to take you a lot longer, and it's going to be on dirt roads, and it's going to be bumpy and tiring and take a lot of gas. And after brain injury, there's a lot of connections that get severed, depending on what the injury is. There's a lot of really delicate connections there. And you can rebuild those, but it takes a while. And in the process, it's pretty tiring. And it doesn't make any sense why it's so tiring just to stand up or to walk across or to make a decision about what to make for a snack. Like, none of these things make any sense except that those kind of connections aren't quite right. So one of the things that I did early on was I painted. I had started painting 4 months before my brain injury. I started a class online with an instructor I loved, and it was the one thing anybody would allow me to do. I couldn't walk, I couldn't do anything, but I could paint. And so I couldn't follow the lessons because I couldn't see very well, and I couldn't hear what she was saying or follow it. I also couldn't paint in a straight line. So I painted my own paintings, and I've got a couple of examples that I'm going to pull out in a second. But with less detailed reference photos, I'd paint in 5-minute sections, so like one color at a time. So it took weeks to do a painting. And on big panels. So I went to look in my phone to figure out what the paintings were that I painted right after my injury. And this is the first one I did. So I picked a photo, and at the time I'd been painting on little squares, like a quarter of this size. But I pulled out my big panels, and I just dove in to figure out how do I kind of paint my straight lines, they jump. I tried hard, and it... But that's the first one. And then this is the second one. And what I realized when I looked back is that these are two of my favorite paintings that I've done. They are hanging in my house. They make me joyful every day. And there's something about the kind of shift that happened after my brain injury where I couldn't see things super well, but I could still make art. And what I learned was that by doing this every day, after 3 weeks, I could paint a straight line. And so what I found in a lot of realms was that after 3 weeks, my brain relearned something. So if I could stick with it and do something every day, for a short bit, for 3 weeks, then things got easier and better. And there were always more things to get better at, because there's a long list. But that was one of my big early lessons. The other was in physical therapy. So my physical therapist was the only person that I had who was knowledgeable in concussion. And I went to her because I'd hurt my shoulder in the fall. But she introduced herself and said, I noticed you had a concussion. And you're not here to see me for the concussion, but could we look at that? And I said, yes, please. And so she assessed me. She helped me figure out how to look at my finger while I shake my head and not want to puke. But the bigger thing that she taught me was how to pace myself, because nobody else was teaching me that. And so in my sessions with her, the first couple sessions wore me out for a whole week. And I was exhausted, and I'd come back in. And so she cut back what we were doing. She shortened what we did. And after each exercise, she'd check in, and she'd say, where are you at on your symptom scale, on a scale of 1 to 10? I'd say 3. And then it would go up to 5. And she'd say, okay, we're going to take a break. So we'd rest for a couple minutes, and then we'd go back to doing it. And so she taught me how to kind of pay attention to those symptoms, rest, and then go try again, which is a really essential thing, is that if you push it too far, then it's really hard to recover. And so I'm grateful that I learned that first summer. It was really hard to do in my real life because I'm not a person who rests. I am a person in continual motion, used to be. Now I rest. I had to learn how to set boundaries because of the massive consequences that would happen if I didn't. I was thinking of talking more about pacing, but I kind of want to jump to the next part. One of the things I learned in support groups is that brain energy is different than other energy that I've had before. And so one of the analogies that somebody told me that was super helpful was that it's like you have 3 batteries. You've got your normal battery that you use kind of normal day to day. You've got your backup battery, which is what you use when your normal battery runs out, but you have to push through. And then you have your emergency backup battery for when the emergencies really strike. But the challenge is that your normal battery will only recharge if your backup battery is fully charged. And your normal battery can be recharged with a short nap or a short rest or an overnight sleep. But your backup battery takes about a week to recharge. And your backup battery can only recharge if your emergency backup battery is charged fully. And that takes 3 weeks to recharge. And so when I would push myself a little bit beyond my limit, it would take a week to 3 weeks of rest and really cutting back to be able to recover and go back to the sorts of things I was doing before. And so that part of pacing was really tough to figure out. And I don't know if it helps anybody else here, but it's been a good reminder to me. But it wasn't like anything else I'd ever experienced in my normal life. I also have learned a lot about fight or flight mode. So brain injuries often hit people right into fight or flight mode because your most core organ has been hurt. And when you are in fight or flight mode continuously for months or years, it uses a lot of energy. It reduces your ability to rest and your ability to take in nutrients from your food, and you can't recover as well. And so I did a lot of work trying to understand what the vagus nerve was, which is, I'd never heard of it before. But it's the primary driver of the parasympathetic nervous system, so this rest and digest. And if you can motivate your vagus nerve to kick your body into rest and digest, then that helps a lot with everything else. So I went looking to try to figure out what are the ways that we can do that. This vagus nerve controls your heart rate, your digestion, your breathing, your immune responses. And some of the ways that you can stimulate it and to shift your body out of fight or flight and into rest and digest are breath work, meditation, massage, exercise, exposure to cold, really extreme cold, humming, singing, laughter, art, awe, inspiration, and social connection. So I tried taking cold showers. I tried sour candy. I tried sunlight, painting, ceramics, gardening, walking. I started showering every morning and ending with an alternating warm and cold shower, which really helped. That was the biggest one I found at that time. I started painting every day. I had an emergency kit. I still carry it with me always that would give me like a sensory break if I need to. So I've got earplugs in it. I've got sour candies. I've got water. I've got medicine. But one of the things that I was hearing was most helpful is humming or singing. And I'm not a musical person. I can't hear or remember the words to songs. And post-brain injury, there was a lot of music that my brain just couldn't handle. And humming at random didn't hold my attention for long. So I was struggling with what to do with this. But at about the same time, I realized I needed to figure out how to be around people, too. And so I asked Tate, would you go back to church with me? We hadn't been around since before COVID. And it was a good, low-stress place where I could come and kind of go as I needed and my symptoms dictated, and was really the perfect answer to kind of starting to see people again and interact. I often would sit over there, farthest from the music, with earplugs in for the whole service, and I had a walking stick, and I often, I don't know if anybody noticed, but I'd often end up on the couch in the back room, listening from there, which worked. I was here. We'd sneak out right after until I got to the place where I could actually socialize with all of you. But it was a great way to be able to start to be around people again. And I don't know that any of you know that that was what I was doing then. And in time, it got better. I was able to be around crowds of people who were milling about and not tip over. I was able to put up with music. I don't have earplugs in anymore, and I'm up here, which would have never happened a year and a half ago. And I realized something, that I've been UU since childhood, and so I know a lot of UU hymns. And these songs are slower and more palatable for my temperamental brain. And so, and church music is almost intentionally timed to make your breath happen in calming patterns, like you would in breathwork and meditation. And UU songs have always grounded me in challenging times and often have messages of hope and acceptance. So I asked friends on Facebook for suggestions of their favorite UU songs. And I made a playlist on Spotify, and I sorted the songs to start with the easiest to handle for my brain. Those with a solo singer and a piano or a guitar with them. And I'd sing along to this playlist when I needed to calm down my system, which was helpful. But if I sing along to the playlist for 5 to 10 minutes multiple times a day, it's even more helpful and prevents the panic from even starting. So I put it on when I'm driving alone, and I still do. I still do this multiple times a day. And the car is a great place to sing when you're essentially tone deaf. The two songs we're singing today, the one we already sang and the one that we will sing, are the first two songs on that playlist. So they are the ones that I have sung multiple times a day for over a year, for a year and a half. And when I sing along, I think about our community here at UUFB. I wondered about giving a sermon about this whole experience when I listened to it, which has been something I thought about of like, this could be a cool sermon to share. And I bet nobody at UUFB has realized how much of my recovery was based within this community. Our songs have helped heal my nerves. Sometimes when I sang them and was having a tough time, I'd picture singing them in community with all of you, and I'd feel less alone. So you were there with me, even when you didn't know it. You are also who I went to first when I was trying to figure out how to interact with people in groups again. And you were the perfect community when other people were tricky because everything's predictable here, follows a nice standard plan. You didn't mind when I asked you to repeat yourself. You understood when I wasn't feeling well and had to leave. You didn't mind if I showed up sometimes but couldn't at others. And you were always happy to see Tate and I when we could make it. I'm not fully healed yet. I struggle with many things, but I'm doing so much better than I was. And in some ways, I'm doing better than before my injury. My priorities are more clear. I've learned how to rest and set boundaries to take care of myself. And I've learned more about myself and what is important to me.